Welcome to Cascade Church Podcast,
a church we hope is both safe to be and safe to grow.
Enjoy!
Good morning to y'all. My name is Kurt. I am a co-pastor here at Cascade. And we're actually starting a new message series for the month of March. Happy March to y'all. To help us get there, I'm going to talk a little bit about growing up. Did any of you grow up in small towns, like kind of smaller places? Okay, this is going to be fun. If you said smaller, keep your hand up a little bit, unless you don't want to, whatever, it's fine. How many for you, like smaller is like 20,000 people? Okay. If you're like, yeah, it was smaller, 20,000 or lower, that was small. Keep your hand up. All right, what about like 15,000 smaller? 10,000 smaller? 5,000 smaller? There's still a couple of hands. This is fun. 2,500 smaller? 1,000 smaller? Okay, wow, under 1,000. That's so fun. We'll talk about that later, Val. I grew up in the town of Farmington, California, population 199 people. It's pretty small. Half of them had the last name Croon, so a real vibe around there. But the place that I grew up in, the reason why I talk about it is it was incredibly and still is agricultural. I actually went on a road trip back to the home that I grew up in this summer, and as we pulled into the one-stop sign of the town, my seventh grade son was like, "I don't belong here." And I said, "Yeah, me too. That's why we're coming back here." I don't know if you ever had this experience of growing up or being somewhere that you look around and you're like, "I don't think I'm supposed to be here." Where like the dominant social club in my high school was 4-H. Maybe you're familiar with the 4-H crew. I'm like, I don't have a love or appetite for animal husbandry. I don't think this is my scene. I don't think this is where I'm supposed to be. Our high school parking lot looked like a classic car show. Because I was like, that's what you did. And I was like, I don't know that this is where I belong. And I always felt like I didn't quite fit. And then I had an experience where I worked at a Christian summer camp. And that summer, I met like students from all these like Christian universities around the U.S. They had all come to work there, and it was like the most fun I had ever had in my life. And more than that, I felt a connection and solidarity with these folks that like finally I felt placed with people that I knew and connected with and knew me. And like we would talk about references and music, and they're like, "Oh, I love that band too." Instead of my friends in high school being like, "I don't know who that is." There's an interesting thing where you can share experiences and you either constantly feel kind of known and further brought in, or you can share your life and experiences, you can feel further pushed out and alienated. And there was a choice that summer after I'd made all those connections at that summer camp that my uncle was getting married in Montana. And my parents said, "All right, we're going to take a road trip from the Central Valley of California up to Montana." Imagine the states you have to drive through to get there. Can you do that? I know it's the U.S. and geography is not like our thing, but it's bleak. That is a bleak drive of the spaces that people like were traveling west. And we're like, we got to go further, right? This can't possibly be where we stop. That's what we drove through to get there. And if you, like maybe you're at this age now, when you're early in high school, you have these moments where you grow so rapidly. And in your life, it took forever to get there. To all the adults in your life, they're like, "I blinked. And weren't you like 6 yesterday?" Hanging out with all my uncle and my family's friends, we're going to be like, "Were you still into those Pokemons? What are you up to these days, scamp?" It only serves to make you feel more alienated. Like, I don't belong here. No one knows me. No one has any idea of what I'm interested in, what I like to do, who I am, and what I'm becoming today. And it was this choice between going to with a community of people that I felt the most known that I had ever felt in my life and a family gathering where I felt like I wouldn't be known at all. And I want us this morning to touch into that place, because it's a real interesting dynamic. If you've ever had an experience, or if you can think from a moment, whether in high school or middle school or college, that you had differing communities, that you felt like you had an opportunity to move to one place or another where you live, maybe with your with family. Maybe it's just the experience, if you did go away to college, of coming back to your hometown after that first semester, and you're like, what is happening here versus what was happening from the place that you left? Tap into what is that experience. And what were you being drawn to with the community that you wanted to be part of, that you felt known in? And what were you being repelled from the other community that you could have been a part of? And so how we do this normally at Cascade is we just have a time to be able to talk and share with the people around us. And so we just encourage you, whatever size group they are, just kind of turn around, make sure that everyone's included that wants to be included, and allow those who want to be able to share to share. If you're like, we're going to go around and everyone has to talk, no, we're not. It's fine to just listen. It's fine to just be. That's totally great here. But we want to have an opportunity for you to know some of the amazing people that you're around. So if you would turn to the people around you, make sure you say your name and discuss these questions. An experience of being pulled between two very different communities, and what was drawing and what was repelling you from those communities. If you could turn and talk to the people around you now. All right, as we gather back together, I hope that you were able to think about and process an experience you have of kind of feeling those different communities, one that you feel drawn to and one that you maybe feel a little bit repelled from. And the one aspect of it that I would love, I don't know if it came up with any of your discussions, that I'd love for you to contemplate is, like, in the experience that I shared, in general, I enjoy being around my family. But when I felt like during that summer, when everyone was going to be having this reunion, or I could be in Montana with my family, it wasn't two neutral options. I actually felt a need to demonize my family because I was going to be missing out on something I liked. I was like, you know what? There might be something wrong with Uncle Corny, that he doesn't know more about my interests. His name's Cornelius. We called him Uncle Corny. Like, it wasn't just that, like, hey, what, you know, he lives here. He is probably not going to be super interested in a young teenage nephew. Like, that's totally normal. It actually got to the point where I'm like, there's something wrong with him that he doesn't care more about me and my interest. And if that reunion wasn't taking place at the same time, would I have felt that or created that narrative? Probably not. But there seems to be something within us that when we feel like we have different communities to be a part of, we don't just, like, celebrate the differences of them or acknowledge them. We tend to elevate and deify certain things. It's like, this is the greatest collection of humanity that's ever happened, and I have to be a part of it. And if I'm not a part of it and I have to be someone else, this is probably the worst collection of human beings that I can be a part of. In the same way of, like, my hometown, I'm like, it was fine. But then once I got an experience outside of it, I'm like, this place stinks. I don't want to be here at all. And before that, like, that's not the reality of the town that I grew up in. It's great in so many ways. I think it's a helpful grounding as we talk about the story of Jonah. And we're going to talk about the story of Jonah, hopefully in a way that's new for you, if you've heard the story of Jonah before. But how it starts, the way that story begins, is that this prophet named Jonah is called to a place of Nineveh. And Jonah's like, that place sucks. Like, in no way do I ever want to go there. Not just I don't want to go there, I want to find the opposite direction and go that way instead. Now, if setting some of the scene of this story, Jonah is a prophet. And so the prophets within the Old Testament serve to kind of reflect and talk about, this is the voice of God within our community. This is what God is saying to us. Now, the prophets usually weren't like, you're doing great, sweetie. Nailing it. Keep on going. No, the prophet served to say, these are the ways that there is violence and there's harm to the community happening here, and they have to be addressed. It wasn't a position that people wanted to have. Prophet wasn't like a highly profitable, sought-after role. It actually is difficult because you are remaining in community with the individuals that you are calling to change and shift their behavior. Now, what's interesting about this is that God is calling Jonah to Nineveh, a community and a place which had done harm to Jonah and his people, and a place that Jonah had no interest in being part of. It wasn't like he was a Portland Timbers fan, and God was like, you got to go up to Seattle. And he was like, ew, yucky. I don't like to be in Sounders country. It's not that kind of surface level dislike. It's a way deeper understanding of there's a part of who I am that is under attack by these individuals. So I think oftentimes, if you've heard the story of Jonah, it can be framed in like, God was calling this individual towards obedience, and he was disobedient. I think that's way too simplistic of a reading. I think God is inviting us to face things that are really difficult and aspects of our community and who we are that we are not interested in facing. And in that way, I actually think Jonah is one of the most relatable characters in all the scriptures. And what he does is elevated, as we see some of his reactions are. I see myself more in Jonah than I do most characters. Like, it doesn't matter that the God of the universe is like, you need to go do this. Like, no way. 100% no. And if you're like, how do you look at an authority figure and with that confidence say, absolutely not? I would be like, have you hung out with 2 and 3-year-olds? It's easy. That's actually an important part of development, is that you learn in like differentiating yourself and who you are and what you want to see in the world. So what we want to do is in our Overcoming Polarization series, we want to look at the story of Jonah from that lens. So we're going to jump past Jonah and the big fish. We're going to get past that part of it, because I think that's where the story gets really good. And the story doesn't stop there. So a lot of times we can be like, well, that's the point of the story. In the whale, vomited up, ta-da, and then he goes and does the right thing. I think that's when the story gets really, really good and the most relatable. So if you have a Bible with you, a Bible app, I encourage you to read along. We're going to start in Jonah 3, verse 4 and 5, and we're going to see this incredible message that Jonah delivered to people. Starting in verse 4, it says, Jonah began to go into the city, going a day's walk, and he cried out, 40 days more, and Nineveh shall be overthrown. And the people of Nineveh believed God, and they proclaimed a fast, and everyone, great and small, put on sackcloth. This is one of the wildest couple of sentences in all the Bible. Think about being on the receiving end of this message, this sermon. Where is the hope in this message? Jonah comes into a community of people he does not like and literally went in the opposite direction. And I want you to hear the hope that Jonah has in this message. The emphasis isn't on, you have 40 days. The emphasis is on the overthrown. Jonah is like, I'll show up, but my only hope is that God actually does what God can do, which is overthrow this entire community. That you would be annihilated and wiped out. Like, that would be what justice would look like, is if the community of Nineveh ceased to exist. If we want a more beautiful and verdant community to be a part of, then the elimination of Nineveh is how we get there. And that's reflected in his message. I love the idea of a community of people that face their wrongdoing, because that's what's happening here. When it says that they believed God, it wasn't like they didn't believe in who God was, and then they had this moment of like, oh, now I can put my hand on a Bible and say the sinner's prayer, and then I'm like a part of the community. That in the Old Testament, when you say believed in God, that is linked to understanding how you relate to other people. And do you live in a world where everybody has their own individual deities, and we just have a battle to see who's the best deity? Or do you believe that there is a God of all that means that everyone's a part of it and everyone's included? when they believed in God, they said, oh, that means that there's actually a God that's over all of us. And the violence that we have placed within believing this one deity has created a violence that we need to mourn and take account for. That's what Nineveh does. This isn't just a change in ideology. They don't just take down all their old churches and the gods that they were worshiping and bring in the new gods. They actually recognize that coming into understanding this God changes fundamentally how we see ourselves in relationship to everyone else. And when we realize that, that leads to a necessary process of mourning, grief, for the harm that we've created against others. So, I already said, prophet is like not a job that you're going after. You're not going through the job listings and like, I love prophet. So think about this from Jonah's perspective. He is called to be a prophet. He delivers what I think is easily one of the worst messages of all time. And it works. So how does Jonah respond to that? Probably backflips, right? Well, let's see in chapter 4, starting in verse 1. But this was very displeasing to Jonah, and he became angry. He prayed to the Lord and said, oh, Lord, is not this what I said while I was still in my own country? That is why I fled to Tarshish at the beginning, for I knew that you were gracious and merciful, slow to anger, abounding in steadfast love, and relenting from punishment. I say that because that's how you have to read that. There is a mocking tone in how Jonah is talking to God about God's best attributes. This is why I didn't want to be here, because I knew that you want to forgive and reconcile and bring people into deeper community. Blah, blah, blah. Ugh. Here's the thing, is that there's a way of reading this where you're like, oh, grow up, Jonah. But I actually see so much of myself in this. I love the idea of a merciful God to me and to my people. A merciful God to all people? No, thank you. I like the sports metaphor of God, where if we are all on this team, we're good and we're awesome and we're safe and we have little chants and little things that we do, and everyone who's not a part of us suffers because they're not. There is pain and discomfort for them in their non-belonging. And ultimately, what my belonging means is I was righter than everyone else. I was better and smarter than everyone else. And we all get to celebrate in a buffet table of heaven one day. And everyone else has to watch us do it. Is there a version of Christianity that you've heard of that before? Yes. Is that the version of God, First Testament God here, that you're seeing displayed? No. It's possible that some of those versions of God were actually created in our image and less in the image of who God is throughout. All right, worst message of all time. It works, and Jonah's ticked. Let's keep reading. And now, O Lord, please take my life from me, for it's better for me to die than to live. The drama of Jonah. I love it so much. And the Lord said, is it right for you to be angry? And then Jonah went out of the city and sat down east of the city and made a booth for himself there. And he sat under it in the shade, waiting to see what would become of the city. Now, given the context clues, I think what he did is he delivered this message. They all repented. And Jonah's like, I don't know. There's still a thread of hope that God's going to smite them. And I want front row smiting seats. So I'm going to go up to the east side just in case things turn in some way so I can see these people destroyed, because nothing would make me happier. Continuing on, God said to Jonah, and this is after he builds the shelter, he has shade that is over the top of him, and then a worm comes through and eats it, and then it withers and died, and Jonah's furious. Have you ever had a really long, stressful week, and then you're walking through your house at night and you bump your toe and you just lose it? That's Jonah right now. He's like, I was going to Tarshish and then you swallowed me into a whale and I got vomited on the sea and I did a message and then the worst people in the world converted and they were like, yay, we love God now. We're going to be cool about it. And I went up here and then this thing happened and then a worm came through and ate my bush and he is livid, livid at this idea. And God's like, really? Is it right for you to be mad about the bush? And then he said, yes, angry enough to die. I love that so much. How many times have you had a partner or a friend or someone be like, hey, is this maybe about something else? And you're like, no, it's not about something else. It's about this thing right now, and it's not fair, and it's not happening. And yeah, I am crying about the fact that Chick-fil-A is closed on Sundays, but it's about Chick-fil-A, and don't try to move the focus of the conversation away from Chick-fil-A. I never thought I'd say a business is too Christian, but they're too Christian. I love the relatability of this. Here's what I see mirrored back to myself, and we've hit on it already. I function so much of my life that if we could just eliminate people that I disagree with and I believe that their treatment and their legislation is violent and unhelpful, if I could just take the people that have said things that I find to be distasteful and hateful, and if I could eliminate them from the picture, then we could finally have the society that we're looking for. Then, and there is such a logical disconnect in the midst of it. If I could just eliminate all the people that I disagree with, then we could have the perfect community. Then we would all be good. Well, we would all be good if we just got rid of all the non-uses. And I think what it exposes in me is all I love to talk about mercy and grace and reconciliation, hard-won relational journeys that we have to have together. I love the idea of them. And practicality, I much prefer elimination. We get rid of the hard and difficult conversations and people we disagree with, and then we have ultimately what we're looking for. And I think that's ultimately the story of Jonah. The story of Jonah is that God is working to radically include and overcome the polarization that we constantly step inside of, where we create camps of individuals that if we're all here, we're good. And if we're good, then you're bad if you're not in the same camp. I actually think this is what Jesus is talking about in Matthew 16. We'll look at Matthew 16 really quickly. The Pharisees and Sadducees came, and to test Jesus, they asked him to show him a sign from heaven. And Jesus answered them, "When it is evening, you say it will be fair weather, for the sky is red. And in the morning, it was stormy today, for the sky is red and threatening. You know how to interpret the appearance of the sky, but you cannot interpret the signs of the times. An evil and adulterous generation asks for a sign, but no sign will be given to it except the sign of Jonah." And then he left them and went away. What sign of Jonah is Jesus referencing? Most people would say, as we're at Matthew 16, so we're getting to the end of Matthew. This is getting very close to the crucifixion of Jesus, saying, oh, well, Jesus is saying he is going to die the way that Jonah was died, swallowed by a whale, will be away for 3 days, and then he will reappear. And I think there's an aspect of that that's actually true. Absolutely true. I also think the true miracle, the true sign of the Jonah story is the radical inclusivity of God. And the true miracle accomplished in Jesus Christ is through this action, this death, this resurrection, the way that he lived and moved and healed, there's an inclusion for people that we previously thought was out. That lines that we created between Jew and Gentile, male and female, slave and free, as Paul says, are eradicated, are gone. That's the true miracle. And ultimately, if we're interested in this Jesus story, if we're interested in coming around and saying who God is, that's the thing that we have to reconcile with. Do we serve a God of annihilation or reconciliation? Are we interested in overcoming that polarization, or do we kind of feed off of it in some way? Because it makes us feel better about ourselves if there can be another group that we can say is wrong or bad. Now, I want to very importantly caveat everything I've said so far. This does not mean that there are not communities that you are not a part of that have perpetuated violence and horrific legislations and ways that have diminished the humanity of you or people that you love. I am not trying to say, like, why don't we all just get along? No. True reconciliation, to actually overcome polarization, takes really hard and difficult conversations where people, like the people of Nineveh, have to repent for the harm that they've created in this world. That is absolutely present. The deeper question for us to ask is, do I think that that peace is won? Do I think that reconciliation is best won by their true repentance that I am invested and interested in, or their annihilation, or they go somewhere else? In this election cycle, and I know we have some Canadian citizens in the room, but I do invite us to not lean on the trope of, if this doesn't go the way that I think is best for this country, that I'm moving to Canada. Because it continues a cycle of saying that ultimately the way that we can best live is if we can just separate from the people that I agree with and the people that I don't agree with. But instead, what would that energy look like in having tough conversations with many people in this room, your family members, with love and with hope for true reconciliation? Now, we've talked about this before. I love to reference this. Our beloved Connie Baker, who's a therapist, gave this framework that I talk about a lot. Reconciliation isn't saying sorry and just getting back in relationship with one another. It's two things that both have to coexist and operate equally. One is a true change in behavior. Reconciliation, to be back in relationship, isn't just saying sorry. It's changing the behavior that led to the split or the pain or the difficulty. And two, that change in behavior has to demonstrate itself over time. And oftentimes, what individuals who have created harm will say is, hey, I changed my behavior. And you say, yeah, last week. Let's see that demonstrated over time. Or they will say things like, that was 5 years ago. Well, time has taken place, but there has been no change of behavior. So I'm not saying run back into painful or disrespectful or damaging relationships in your life. We absolutely hold people to account to what reconciliation means. But are we committed to that long-standing work? And I think if we understand who Christ is and who God is, that's the kind of work that we're interested in, especially as we head into a polarizing time. Would you pray with me?